Welcome to the Board Gamer Podcast. On episode 5, we're going to be discussing everything about the Teach. Cool, just before we get started then, we've got a few announcements. I know we've done episode 1 about the board game of the website, so I thought we'd just give a bit of an intro about how the website's going, what it's looking like so far, because I know some people have been dying for some updates. So, the main part of the website, the back end, is pretty much nearly all there. So, as part of the board game website, we've been working on the reviews. We've got all the data incoming into our database service back end. Now we've got to get it all collated. So when you click on that review system, you can trust that it's a fair review and reflected on just that board game. It doesn't influence any other board game. And it's just a medium value for that actual board game. So that's what I've been up to onto the website. And also, I think it was good to... We're doing it in person today, which is the ideal way to do these podcasts. It's been a bit of a test. So the first 3 that we've done, it was kind of... I know you've done a bit of, Jake, of podcasting before, but it was all our foray into podcasting for the first time together. And it worked really well in person. Last week, circumstances arise, life gets in the way, and we had to do it online. It wasn't the best. Like, there was some technical issues, and I think the conversation just flows so much better in person. Definitely. So I kind of wanted to give a bit of, not an apology, but this is probably going to be our standard. And if it does arise where we need to do an online podcast, then so be it. But hopefully we can take that podcast and just learn from it.
Yeah, that's going to be a really good point. I must say, I'm really looking forward to the review system. We've had a little bit of a talk about the review system in some of our team meetings, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how it's implemented in the Board Gamer website. It's going to be different to what we see in other websites, and it's going to have a few unique elements to it. So I think it's really going to be something that's going to change the board gamer community's way of reviewing board games.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see some of our graphics and visuals on our social media channels. We've done a real overhaul of all our socials, and that is going to be reflected on the site as well. Like, we can't wait to show you guys how the website's going to look.
I just wanted to mention as well that we've got the authorization part of it really working well using Auth0, is it?
Yeah, that's the one.
So it's really secure. That was a really important part of getting it absolutely bolted tight so that everyone can be at ease that their data's protected and that sort of thing. So we made sure we got the right, I guess, service in there and the right system in there to control that.
I think that's a really key point, you know, that I think all of our viewers and listeners will be really glad to know that even though we could release the site perhaps earlier, it may not be as secure. Things may glitch and bug more. So we don't want that. We want to provide a quality premium service right from the beginning. Hence why we're willing to forsake perhaps having to wait just a little bit longer. But in return, people are going to get a much more stable and a much more safe and secure website thanks to Matt's genius code.
No pressure. No pressure at all. The part of the site that's interesting as well, as you was touching on there, Tim, about the authentication, is I know there's many SaaS products that people use where you log onto the site and there's no need for any passwords. You just use a different provider. So say like Apple, Google. That is like, for me personally, that is the best way to sign up for a service. And we wanted to reflect that on Board Gamer, where it's no longer some traditional, username, password, that's it, you're done. If we can add a bit of two-factor as well in, so there's an extra layer of security. I mean, I know we're not storing bank details or anything on the site, but it's still important to make sure everyone's got a seamless, secure flow into Board Gamer. Cool. So on to episode 5. So we're going to be talking about the Teach, what our ways of working. And I think there's a whole philosophy about teaching a board game, which when you get into the hobby, you're not really signed up for, in all honesty. It's like, yes, I want to play a few games. And just comparing it to video games, you don't have this whole system. Like, you've got to learn the mechanics of, say, if you're playing an action-adventure game, like all the controls, jumping, whatever. Whereas in a board game, you've got to actually teach the product, know the product inside out, so if people ask questions. And yeah, it's a prerequisite that a lot of people just either kind of skip and think, oh, I'll just let someone else do that. But yeah, as you, the further you dive into the hobby, you soon realise that this is an element that you've got to get used to.
Mm.
It really is a skill in itself, isn't it? Because like you say, there's so many factors to being at the point where you can teach a board game, even just making sure the game's set up right, making sure the game flows, what happens after your turn, which pieces move. All of these are really vital parts to keep a game running. And it's not something that you want to have to pause the game to check on.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So we'll be going through, I think a good way to start this is having a look at our own philosophies on how we teach board games. Mm-hmm. So any volunteers for starting?
Don't mind.
You want to go, Tim?
Yeah, I can go. Yeah.
Cool.
I'm thinking about how I like to learn games.
Okay.
Like, flip it around a little bit. I personally need to know everything, even though it's a first game and we always call it a throwaway game, like, don't worry about trying to win or anything, just learn the game. I still like to know, like, have a strategy. So I'd like to know everything. I know not everyone's like that. I guess I always like to maybe start with the end, like, what are we, what's the goal of this game? What are we trying to achieve? Because then as you're explaining the actions in the game, you've got that in mind of what you're trying to achieve at the end of it. So I try and do that. Not all games lend itself to that sort of teach. Sometimes it's just better just to talk about the actions and what you can do in a game. But that's where I'd go first. Talk about the end and then go through each action, what you can do, go through all the ins and outs. And then hopefully everyone... I do think a lot of games, you understand it more when you put it into application and play the game.
Yeah.
But if, as long as you kind of know the main actions and mechanics, you can start to kind of understand it more when you start playing it. So I like to just kind of go through everything and then try and let's just play and see how we get on, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's you made some really good points there, especially the point about knowing a strategy to work with. I feel exactly the same, although I do always view, like, the first game, I'm not really in it to win it. Yeah, in most definitely. Games I know a lot of people might think a bit different and their competitive edge comes out. But for me, it's about having fun. And okay, if I can dive into a strategy and it works out, wow, that's great. But it's not the whole point of the game is, oh, this is the strategy. This is how to win. You do this.
Definitely.
And there was a game I played of Brass where I was like, you know what? I've found the strategy. I'm just going to dive into potteries every single time now. And I really like that Brass because the way that the tiles work for whatever city or town is producing that
the market,
resource. Yeah. Yeah. It can never be the same strategy that works.
Yeah.
So although I had the opinion that, oh yeah, potteries is the way forward.
Those 20 points.
Yeah, I know. It didn't work out the next time, so yeah. Or if someone else is fighting for the same one,
you have to switch.
Yeah, it's always about, like, manoeuvring your strategy. So I think them games are really good in teaching you different ways to actually play the game.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
Yeah, if I speak a little bit about how I like to
teach games. Yeah, go ahead.
I can totally see the way Tim teaches it. I've experienced Tim teaching me a few games before, but I was thinking about this as I was listening to you. I think it comes down to as well, do you find teaching to be a chore that needs to be done, or can you find the joy in teaching a game? Because if it's a chore, it feels like, oh, right, let's get this teach over and out the way, and then we can start playing the game. And it can feel a bit burdensome, and you can feel like it saps the joy out of the game a little bit. Whereas I've started to try and find ways to make teaching a fun part of the game. And I was thinking about a few examples of how I do this, and I've enjoyed teaching quite a few different games. And one way, I think it depends a little bit on the game itself. Is it a light game? Is it a heavy game? For example, when I've taught a heavy game, generally I plan for the game to be a throwaway game for me, not so much for the person, but I think about when I taught, an example being when I've taught a heavy game before, like Gaia Project, I will completely set up the game for them. I will pick where all the tiles go. I'll pick what faction they play. I'll make sure everything's set out. I'll walk them through. I'll hold their hand through everything. But I don't teach them every rule. I only teach them things that are applicable. And I make it quite transparent. And I say, you're going to have a great game. If you come across anything, I'll teach it you as you need it. But you might not learn everything this game because you might not need to. But what I just want is you to enjoy the game. And I really try and reinforce that joy element. However, if I'm going to teach a game, for example, like Nidavellir, I've taught it in a few different group settings with a variety of different types of players. And when I do something like that, I try and really from the get-go emphasize this game's simple. You're going to love it. You're going to really enjoy it. So it already puts people at ease and it builds a little bit of excitement. And I'll go, you've got this card, this card, this card, and this card, and that's it. If you remember that, you've got the whole game. Of course, there's more rules to it. But I just try to almost simplify it so people don't feel like, oh, right, I need to sit down and get ready for learning a whopping great game. If people think, oh, that's it. Oh, cool. And it kind of, their mind almost prepares to learn a game.
Yeah.
And I find that that is a little trick I try and do to build the joy into learning the game rather than learning the game being a chore.
No, that's really good points there. I think one of the things that I was thinking about when you just mentioned that was the time that you taught me Gaia Project. You set everything up in the factions for, not for me to win, but at least I wasn't going to have a shocking score. And if you don't know the mechanics for a certain faction, it's always going to be difficult. And I think the same can be applied to games like Roots, where that asymmetry, like the cats might be way more suited against a certain alliance or so I think you can definitely maneuver it for a new game, a certain game.
I mean, you think of in about, say, like Wingspan. If someone is playing Wingspan for the first time and they just draw bad cards, they're not going to enjoy the game and they might not want to play again. Well, I would rather invest my time into that person and say, look, it's not really the done thing, but let's swap that card, have this card instead, play with that, and try working on this row. And if you just try working on this row, you're going to really enjoy the game. And what do? They invest in one row, they've got the right birds, and they see why the game is fun.
Yeah.
So then they want to play with you a second time, and they're more prepared to not have everything handed to them and spoon-fed. But why do they want to play it a second time? Because they saw how the game works and why it's fun. Mm. It may not be the rules, it might not be the done thing, but they've learnt the game in a fun way.
Yeah, I think Wingspan is actually a really good example because I don't know if you followed their template system. They come with a card and it basically goes through everyone's first three moves of the game. So you are kind of limited in the scope of what you can do after that because it set you up for these certain patterns. But everyone, by going through the three moves, would experience every aspect of the game. So you've got an idea, oh, I can lay eggs by doing this. Oh, I can play a card by doing this. And it just goes through. And I thought that was a really clever method, especially for a gateway game. Like, I think heavier games, they've kind of, they're not assumed, but they know that the chances are you've played a few board games in your life before. So you kind of understand some of the mechanics. Maybe that's an assumption definitely. That designers need to take into consideration that that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, definitely.
But for something like Wingspan, Catan, they're the ones where I think the setup can be really clean and it can show each player, oh, you've got X amount of moves. This is the way to do them.
So I had a really good example of this when we consider Wingspan. And one thing I would do is, I wouldn't, when I teach a game, add unnecessary details. As an example, say we're teaching Wingspan. If I was teaching a game of Wingspan, I would not, in most cases, I would not bother teaching the learner about the different types of nests on different birds. It's an unnecessary detail for them to think about. I would probably wait until, and an example being, you know, those end game scoring, I'd set them up. I would make sure there isn't a nest one on there because nests are for bonus scores and things like that. Well, when they're playing a gateway game, and for most people, this is what I mean, if it's most people, not say like yourselves, but if I was teaching your average person a gateway game like Wingspan, I would spend all my time helping them get comfortable with putting bird cards down, mm-hmm. understanding how to take actions, and understanding how to put eggs down. Perhaps on a second game, or if they really feel like they were doing well, or if they're already a heavy gamer that has demonstrated they're getting it, it's no problem.
Yeah.
Then I might add a detail like teaching them nests. So even though technically I'm not teaching them all of the game, they're going to have a better game and they're going to enjoy it. So you try and have a bit of flexibility. Sometimes if you're trying to teach every single detail about a game, you can overburden a learner.
Yeah, I agree.
And then they're not going to have a good play.
I would say I would agree to most of that. I think if it's a heavy gamer, I wouldn't worry too much, because I think heavy gamers, there's so many games now, we'll probably get to the table and you're telling me something and I think, oh, that's just like this game or that mm-hmm. game. And I've got something to reference and I go, totally get it. You don't need to explain anymore. And like those, say, for example, you had a nest thing. If you just explain that, I'd think, okay, I kind of get it. I'll play in the game and I'll be fine with it, I reckon. But I think, like, I know you really like the roll and teach sort of method. And I think actually one thing I've realised recently is that's really good for new gamers or teaching new gamers games. One thing I've realised recently myself is I've gone a little bit too heavy in with a teach for a new gamer or somebody who's played something like Catan, like a real proper gateway game.
Yeah.
And then I've just gone, okay, let's play this game. And it's not like super heavy, but it, like, for me, it doesn't feel like a heavy game at all. It's like a medium weight at best, you know. But I realised how much they struggle with it. And I thought, actually, I've probably gone a bit too heavy in with this. So I've had to learn to kind of like, and actually a roll and teach might have probably been a bit better and just like slowly got them into it. And it's funny because a lot of these new gamers, they go, oh, Catan's the best game in the world. And I'm thinking there is so many good games out there, but that's obviously in their mind. It's their first time into it. So I think it depends massively on the level of gamer that you're playing with and the game itself. Because I think when we played Scythe, for the first time, I think you did the roll and teach, and I was struggling at first. I was like, but I don't know my strategy, so I don't actually know what I'm doing.
Yeah,
I think there I would have rather just tell me what I need to do, and then I'll pick it up in the game, even though I might not understand everything straight away.
That is a good point.
But for heavier games, I think you can be a little bit more like, let's just go for the actions, and you should pick it up.
Scythe's a really interesting one, because from the box and the artwork, I thought it was a war game. So I originally went in thinking, okay, I'm going to relate this to something like Root, where in reality, it's actually
just an economy game.
A game about the economics. Can't get my words out. The economy of, like, what is it meant to be? Like postmodern?
Yeah, it's like a post Great War diesel punk 1920s area control. Yeah.
it's a crazy concept. Where from the box, I was like, oh, well, this is a war game.
You see the mechs and
absolutely. And interestingly, what I really like is the rule book. They do explain a few designer notes, and the reason that Jamie Stagmeier named it Scythe was on the premise that it's all about kind of the threat of war, that a scythe can be used both for war, but also for farming. Mm. So the whole concept of the game is you're protecting your borders. You don't really want to go to war because you want to do farming, but you're kind of always balancing that edge. Mm. Well, I kind of like that subtle kind of metaphor to the game.
I think Scythe is amazing, like how it uses propaganda and the threat of war, as you said, and also how showing love towards the people who are there and a more liberalistic approach maybe isn't the right way for a certain nation.
Yeah, definitely.
It's crazy game to actually, when you put it on paper and you look at it like that.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
I must say, though, Tim, you made me think about something as I was listening. And I think I've realised I teach gateway and early players better than I teach heavy gamers.
Mm.
Because I love that rolling teach, and it came to mind because you mentioned some other games, and perhaps in the next month or so, I need to teach some gateway gamers Brass Birmingham. Mm. I had some friends and they said, yeah, I bought this game Brass Birmingham. We don't know how to play it. I've tried the rule book and it's so hard. And I can tell because they're not heavy gamers, but they've bought Brass Birmingham. So I said, I can teach at you. But already I know I'm going to have to do a rolling teach. I'm going to exclude, say, 30% of the rules because it's going to burn them out. They want to learn a heavy game without walking their way up to it. And I can do that. But could I teach Brass Birmingham to heavy gamers where I need to know all of the rules? I would find that a lot more intimidating. Mm.
I think games like that, I actually think Brass is not as heavy as it should be. I think the actual, if you look at the card with the actions on, there are only so many set actions, and some of them are really straightforward.
Yeah.
Delete some tiles off your board, take a £30 loan. It's like really straightforward stuff. The bit that gets really technical is your network, connected locations, coal and iron, and how that works. And what I found teaching new players that game is you spend a lot of the time saying, oh, you can't do that. And they go, why can't I do it? Because you're not connected to coal. And then they're getting a frustrating game. So I think that's the main thing, actually, you need to spend time on is understanding how coal works and how the networks work. Trying to get that so they're not having a negative game. Because I played it with a guy that really desperately wanted to play it. And he's only played a few games, he's got a couple heavy games at home and he enjoys them, but he had a terrible time just because he just wasn't getting this coal bit. And then he was going, why can't I do that? And it's like, not connected to coal. Yeah, but I can get it from the market. It's like, you're not connected to the market. And then he's like, and he was putting him, and I felt for him, but it was just like, well, I guess that's the game, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't teach that game, but it was still quite interesting.
On Brass, this is a bit of a side note. There's a great, I don't know what you'd call it, like a little card thing that reference card for Brass Birmingham. And it just shows the seven actions and when you can apply them.
Yeah.
And I thought that, for me, when I first started playing that was really useful.
Definitely.
You know, I will say, though, on this note, you also put in the show notes for this in preparation to consider times when we've struggled to teach a game.
Yeah, I was going to get onto this.
Am I going too
early? No, no, no.
I was going to naturally blend, but if you want.
No, no. Let's keep it with the flow. Yeah, keep it with the flow. Yeah, sorry, carry on. Yeah.
On that note, what I was thinking about is actually a time when I've taught a game badly, and it doesn't always work to do a rolling teach, surprisingly. I remember a few months back, I thought, oh, there's a few people here and they want a nice light game, but maybe they're happy for something just a little bit more meaty. So I got out Hands of Teutonica. Not a hard game. You put cubes down, you take cubes off. I thought, I think they'll be able to cope with this. They've played Pandemic. I think they'll be okay with this concept of cubes. And I thought, what I'm going to do, also worth saying, a lot of these people, English wasn't their first language. So I thought, I'm going to do a rolling teach and I'm just going to make them try actions and see if they'll naturally get the sense of it. We actually ended up abandoning the game. None of them could get it, which surprised me. And I felt like a failure as a teacher. And I think part of it was there was a few other people in the room at the time, a few distractions. Not everyone was engaged. People were kind of talking when I was trying to teach that person. So they weren't really paying attention. So then they were turning to each other going, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? I've got no clue why this is going on. So there were a few circumstantial things, but it also taught me, okay, so maybe not always a rolling teach works, but it also taught me sometimes you need to have the modesty and the humility to know not every game will always work for every group. Maybe I'd just been a little bit optimistic or ambitious in trying to hope that these people would cope with a game like Hansa when really, unless everyone at that table is invested in it,
then
you're going to find it a little bit tricky to try and teach a game like that. So that was my experience of failing at teaching Hansa Teutonica.
That's good. Have you got any experiences of a failed teach or?
Yeah, probably. Probably got loads.
Failed fate.
Yeah. I'll explain what happened with failed fate. I'd actually watched, I read the rule book, I watched a video, the guy explains it really well on YouTube. It had been like maybe a week or two and I brought it and then everyone wanted to play it. And I thought, yeah, I know the rules because I'd read it and I watched it and I kind of get the most of them. There was a couple of just particular rules that I needed to just remember so we got it right.
Yeah.
And I couldn't remember them. And I was, for the life of me, trying to look through the rule book. It wasn't the easiest rule book. It was kind of like a bit back and forth. So it was like, here's the actions, and you read it and you're like, it's not there. And then another page says, explains it a little bit more in detail, and then you go there, wasn't there, and I knew I'd read a couple of these rules and it just hadn't, and I could not find it. So we were all sitting for about 20 minutes, then we ended up watching a YouTube video to understand it. And then there's so many times I find myself in games where I'm referencing the rule book or back to the rule book. Root's actually a really big one, even though I've played it a few times, and I know majority of the rules, but because I don't play it often as I'd like to, I just forget certain little mechanics, and I have to go back to the rule book in the middle of it going, actually, I just can't remember. And I'll go back and just reference it and go, okay, yeah, you can or can't do that. And it does slow the game down a bit. But yeah, I would definitely say there's been moments where I've struggled. I'd say Root is one that I think I struggle for, the fact that I find that I lose everybody after so long, because you have to teach the game and then you have to teach everyone's characters.
Yeah.
It's a big teach, and I find that I lose people quite, you know.
It's a brutal teach.
Yeah, and I'm like, how do I get more engagement with this?
I think that has to be for a certain type of gamer, though.
Definitely, and I think how I would do it is get people to just watch videos now. Go and watch a YouTube video, learn the mechanics yourself sort of thing, and then if there's anything you're unsure of, we can go through it. We could go through it in the game, but yeah.
That's a good point, that is.
Can I ask a question? I'm curious how you two would feel about this. I've personally had it where I've had a game that I thought I knew. I was like, yep, I know this game well. And then I've played the digital app version and noticed a rule that the app's doing. And I was like, why is the app doing that? And it turned out I'd got the rule wrong.
Mm.
And I didn't realize it, but the app actually helped me to kind of straighten out some rules that I'd never got right.
Yes, I had that on Splendor.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And it was such a stupid rule. I think it was one of the first games I played when I got into the hobby. And I love Splendor. And it was the rule with the nobles. I thought you had to take them as part of your go. Where when you acquire, say it's 4 blue, 4 red, they just come.
Yeah. I always thought you had to buy them as well. So yeah. I'm not alone there.
Yeah.
Brass was one. I didn't realise you could sell multiple buildings in one action. I thought,
oh, really?
Like when we first played it a couple of times, I was just selling one building. And then I played with a friend of ours who plays Brass, loves Brass, and he had started accumulating all these buildings. I was thinking, what's his strategy? And then he sold them all. And I was like, I did not know you could do that. And then he just sold the lot. And I was like, damn it. Like, I wish I'd known that earlier. Like, I just read it. I must have just literally missed out like the plural S or something on something.
Oh,
like,
man.
So yeah, I was a bit gutted about that, but fair enough, it's one of those, isn't it? But
so to a degree, sometimes if you like a game enough, buying the app version can help you clarify rules for a game.
Mm.
yeah, that is a good point. And I've never even thought about that. Actually, that goes on nicely to the next topic I was thinking about. So when it comes to actually teaching a game, before that, what is your process to actually
learning? Interesting. So I do like reading a rule book.
I find
that I can absorb it and take it in. Sometimes if it is a bit meaty, I have to do it in a couple of stages because I get a little bit sort of ADHD with it. So YouTube's a really good one. I find that I reference it all the time, but Meeple University on YouTube, I think they're so good at explaining games. I don't know if it's just his accent, his New Zealand accent or something, but he's so good at teaching games, really methodically, showing each process, each action. I've learned a few from him. I think we played the White Castle online and we both just watched that and then jumped straight into it.
Yeah,
it was
good to go after that.
Yeah, and we just referenced a couple of bits in the game, but we were pretty much good to go. But yeah, I would probably rule books, and sometimes I'll just watch playthroughs and that's enough, and then I might just top it off with a rule book just to understand specific rules. But sometimes just watching a playthrough of a game is enough for me to go, I get this game, I know what you're doing. The nice thing is playing, I think what teaching games and learning games, one thing that helps is playing lots of different games, getting exposed to a lot of different mechanics.
The best way to learn a game is to play more games.
Definitely, because you learn all the different mechanics and you can apply them and you can go, oh, I get that. I totally understand how that works. It makes it a quicker process, I think, knowing lots of different processes.
No, they're great points. I totally agree. Jake, any specifics on how you learn a game?
Yes, I think it depends a little bit on what the game is. Is it going to be a light game? If it's a light game like Skull or Splendor, usually the rulebook will do for that. But if we're going to talk about a heavy game, for example, at the moment I'm currently learning a game called Tricarion, which is brutal.
Yeah, that's brutal.
we was looking about learning it as well.
I'm learning it. I've almost learnt it.
Okay.
And it is probably one of the heaviest games I've had to learn. It is so complicated. And essentially, I'm having to do a hybrid. When I'm going to learn a game like that, and I know it's going to be a big bad boy game, I'm not even looking at that rule book, mate. That rule book is going out the window. I'm just going to watch a video. And what I do is I watch a video where he kind of plays through things. And then I also need to set up the game. And I'll almost play through it with the person, or I might pause the video, try doing a few things, and then when I get stuck, I'll rewind the video and watch it, and I'm like, okay, so this is how it works. And I need to do a little dry playthrough so I know how the game flows. Okay, now that's done, then what happens? I watch the video and it says, and now you move on to the next round. Okay, so that's how it works. Because the last thing I want is to be halfway through playing the game and then we're all like, what do we do now? And then I have to look through a rule book that's like 20 pages long for a half an hour. So depending on the weight of game is a big factor. For me, playthroughs are really helpful. In fact, that's one thing I've noticed that even designers are starting to notice. Take, for example, Nemesis is a good example of where they have put on the front of the rule book, don't want to read the rule book? Scan this QR code. And it takes you to a video they've prepared to teach you the game. I think that's a brilliant thing because especially in a more video dominated world, that's the way it needs to be. And that's how I learned Nemesis. I had it all set up, watched the video, and then I used the rulebook for reference.
Yeah.
So even when I still play Nemesis, whenever I'm going to run a game of Nemesis, I'll have the rulebook by me because I always forget little bag pulling, like, what does this token? This token means this. And I always have to check what that event corresponds to. But I use it as reference rather than a teaching guide.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I do something pretty similar to that. So I'll get the game out. I just like to get a feel of the components and then you can kind of match it up with what's on the rule book. And yeah, you're like, oh, this is this resource, this is that resource. And I like the whole, as you said, like stepping through, oh, this does that. Have a look at some of the cards, see how they relate to something else. But I've got this process now of learning a game and it starts off with, I'll watch a tutorial. That's always my go-to. Well, I might read the rule book. It depends on how heavy the game is normally. But if we're talking about a heavier game, I'll watch a tutorial, I'll watch a playthrough, and then I'll play the game as if...
Two players.
Yeah. And that just always like reinforces everything in my head then.
That's literally what I've been doing with Tricarion. I've set it up for two people and I'm trying to pretend like they're not always doing the most advantageous thing. I want to see what happens if they do something stupid. And yeah, I think that's a great way to learn games.
Yeah, I think it makes me laugh. I watched a video before of, I was trying to learn Root and they started playing Root and within the first three moves, they made a wrong move. And I was like, I'm watching this for guidance and the people who are playing through it getting it wrong.
That's the most board gamer thing ever. Someone that's teaching something gets a rule wrong while they're teaching it. If you've never done that, you're not a board gamer.
Yeah, probably.
There's actually YouTube channels where they do that exact thing as well, where they have, I think it's John Geck Games.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
He does one where he plays it as if he's playing a two or three player game and he's playing the game as if, and he's going, okay, now player B will do this or play whatever. And he plays it as if he... So that works really well.
Yeah, I think Meeple University have nailed it.
I think they're the best for teaching.
Maybe that's just our way of learning anything though.
Yeah.
For others, they might be like, oh, maybe this is a bit too methodical. But no, I love them. I think they're great. Also, I forgot their names. Naveen and...
Oh, Before You Play.
Yeah, Before You Play. They're great as well because they often do the teach and then in a separate video, they'll do the playthrough.
Mm. In fact, I've used Before You Play a few times to help me get a sense of a game.
They're quite good.
I think it's really helpful. In fact, I was watching theirs on Singularity recently in learning that. Because I've tried watching a few different things, even with Gaia Project. I thought I had Gaia Project absolutely down. And I was watching Before You Play, and they were going through it step by step. And I was like, hold on, they're getting it all wrong here. They're getting it all wrong. And guess what? It was me that was getting it all wrong. But I was like, it's so helpful to watch someone and the way they walk through it and they do an overhead shot. So, yeah, I would love to get Before You Play. If you're watching this, please join the podcast.
They're going to fly from America, from Southern California.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's my phone. I thought that was like...
Absolutely.
You thought the table collapsed. Or
if, I thought like... Anyway.
Or if you're watching this video and you think we should collab with another board game channel, then please put in the comments who you think we should collab with.
Wow.
No pressure.
Is it Monique?
Monique, yeah.
And Naveen.
Monique and Naveen, yeah.
She's very good at, like, just, again, methodically going through. She has it nicely laid out, and she goes through each thing, and I think it works. And then the playthrough just, like you say, reinforces that teacher, I think.
Yeah, you know, as you play more games as well, you quickly realise how different people adapt. I think that was a great point in what you said, like, maybe I'm a bit better at teaching the heavier board game because I like to understand every single aspect of a game. Where the rolling teach, in terms of my bad experience, it has been on a gateway game. I say gateway. Mm. It was a jump. It was from, I think the heaviest I'd played was Wingspan. And then I jumped to Viticulture because I thought, oh, that's a natural progression. Mm. And I tried to just teach everything. Where I think if I just showed the winemaking process, that would have been the way to go.
There's too many moving parts in viticulture to be able to teach everything.
Yeah, because they couldn't understand the purple cards why they needed to fulfill them. And I was like, this is the way you get points, like the whole point of the game. And I was like, oh no, but we quite like the yellow and the summer and the winter the cards.
Yeah.
I was like, well, you can actually get a few points for that way. But the real way is the purple cards.
There was a game, is it John Company, that actually the rule book is a rolling teach?
Yes, and Voidfall's the same.
Oh, is it? So it says the person teaching has to read it all, but actually when you teach a game, it tells you how to do it as a rolling teach. So they actually, the rule book is based off doing that, which I thought was an interesting concept.
Voidfall is really interesting. So I've tried to learn it. It's really tough. But it says on your first go, just play the tutorial with everyone, and it will still be a competitive game. There's three ways to play it. The solo, cooperative, and competitive.
Mm.
Now, the three ways, it says on your first go, scrap them, just play competitive. There's a companion app that you can go through each step on how it plays. And I thought, you know what, if there's, instead of me reading the whole of there's three rule books to this, bear in mind, and the thick. So it's an absolute beast. But I thought, you know what? I just need to just give it a go and just see how it plays. And I think it's not one of the ones you're going to be teaching your family. Yeah. But
do you know, this is a good thought. And I've never really thought about bringing it up until just now. But I can't believe I forgot to mention it when we were talking about Scythe. But Scythe is a fantastic example of exactly this. That the reference cards you get, the one side is a reference card. And then the other side is your first five turns.
Mm.
So,
I didn't even know that.
If you look at the reference card, they literally have designed it on how to get you playing as a new player. And they've designed the game for most people at least, they've designed it that if you've never played the game before, here's your first five turns. And they say, try doing this. Now try doing this. Now try working towards this. Step number four, have a look at doing this. and five try doing this. And by the time someone's done those five things, they're halfway through the game. They know what they're doing. Yeah. And I thought, that's really clever to design a reference card that you can just give to a first player and say, there's your first five goes. Follow that and you'll have a good game.
I think Stonemaier have nailed that.
Yeah.
That's like one of their key selling points. Especially they're not really in the heavy, heavy game category. It's more like in between that gateway and maybe some even lighter games.
Yeah. I was thinking Root does the exact same thing as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it does have a walkthrough.
It does, yeah. It has a walkthrough game.
Yeah.
The app is amazing for that as well.
I've heard it. I've got the app. I just haven't played it as much. The thing is, when I got to it, because I didn't resonate with the icons as much. So for me, I was thinking, I can't remember what the actions are. And I felt like I had to go and get the player boards out to then understand what I was doing, so I could reference what I was actually doing. But I should play it more. I'd like to.
Here's a thought.
Let's play Root.
Yeah, let's play Root.
I ain't got Root. Oh, no.
Controversial question. As I have one for every single episode now, it seems.
this is just for social.
Yeah. Is every rule always necessary?
Yeah.
Well,
I'd say so, yeah.
Example given, Twilight Imperium 4th edition. You've got six people around the table. You probably get it out once a year. There is going to be a rule wrong at some point. It's a heavy game. Six players, if one person's teaching it, there's no way you can supervise all five other players. Someone's going to get a rule wrong, but you still have a fun time.
I did last time.
Which isn't...
I cheated a little bit at the start, but I didn't. I just forgot the rules.
But did you still have a good time playing?
Yeah, and I didn't win. Like, it wasn't helping me really, but...
Yeah, I mean, none of us are playing actual competitive, you know, like professional. I guess it's a bit different in that scenario, but I think...
So is getting every single rule necessary?
Yeah, I'd still say it is.
Yeah.
Like, I do prefer to get the rules right, but I'm not going to have a hissy fit and get peeved and say, oh, the game's a write-off, we got this rule wrong.
I think that
ship should have been there, not there.
Well, I think the whole point of it is they've play-tested it to keep it as tight as it can be within its set of rules. Like you say, if something goes wrong, it goes wrong. You can still enjoy it, but I do think you want to try and play it to the rules as possible, because that's what makes it a balanced game, I assume.
I totally get you, but you take, like, that is a good example where people are going to get the rule wrong that some ships can transport certain things and they get transport things wrong, or they use command tokens too many times and they get things wrong.
Are you
it's
just
gonna happen
calling me out? I'm joking. I think it was something like that,
but it's gonna happen. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I'm not gonna think, oh, well, the results of this game are void anyway because you got that command token wrong 5 hours ago.
But the thing is, though, I've been in games where I know for a fact the outcome has been changed because...
Someone hasn't got the rule.
Yeah. So I feel that backs up why you should know all the rules. And don't get me wrong, I'm not like that precious in terms of like... I'll never forget 4 years ago when Jake made this move and I lost Catan. Mm. But it's
I've never
like,
played Catan with you.
No. But I'm just like giving an example. Like, yeah. But I know for a fact, I can't remember what game it was now. It might have been Dune Imperium.
Oh, yeah.
I played a game of that before. And on the intrigue card, someone was reusing them.
Oh, right. Okay.
So... Yeah, I was like, wait there, how...
Yeah. Isn't that a point as well? Like, some rules are bigger blunders than other rules.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think those sort of, like, that's where you see it. And like we've said right at the start, we're not in it to win it all the time. It's about having fun. It's about just seeing what score you can get. But then sometimes, if the outcome's, like, drastic, you think, well, was there any point I was playing this sort of game? But
yeah, it depends on... You're right, it depends on how big of the error is and also how tight the game is. Mm. So in June, you're only getting to, what, 10 points?
Yeah. And it is quite tight. The two times I've played it now, so I think the podcast we talked about it, I hadn't played it.
Now you've played it twice.
It was quite tight, like the points stayed very close together. So it is quite a close game. So yeah, if you're doing moves that are allowing you to jump points, then yeah, you're definitely going to be...
That's going to make a difference. And I will say, yeah, you are right. And I do agree. Rules are very important, especially if they're big things. Like, for example, when we played Root that one time and we were playing it with, you know, a friend of ours, and he was accumulating points. So we was like, how the heck are you nearly at 30 and we're still like down here? But that's a major rule error. Yeah. I think there's a difference between a major rule error and sometimes someone gets a slight rule error. I would never call them out and say, oh, the game's ruined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I think sometimes if it's a first play, I'm not too bothered it's a first play. But yeah. In the second play, I'm definitely going to go, right, when we did that last time, that was
call
wrong.
Them out then.
So we're not going to do that this time. But yeah, I was thinking about as well, like some games, I think some rules can be quite difficult. And actually playing them on that, a game I'm thinking about is that, what's it called? Isle of Trains.
Isle of Trains, All Aboard, yeah.
So we played that online, and I reckon if we played that on the table, we probably would have got some rules wrong, because it was complicated. We were struggling to understand it till halfway through the game, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we were on Board Game Arena, and you know it comes up with that red banner saying you cannot do this move. That was pretty much happening for me every single round.
Getting it, were we? And to be honest, if we played that on a table, we probably would have got the rules wrong.
It would have been horrendous. Yeah. But to be fair, that was one of the quickest teaches I've ever done.
Yeah.
We learned the game in like 10 minutes, and it was like... It was like a 2.6 or something. So yeah,
it was a bit complicated. Like it did explain everything, but it was hard to get your head around some of it. And maybe we played it too late at night or something as well. But
yeah, it was like 10 o'clock. But
yeah, we were like looking at the rules, going okay, and then we thought let's just play it. We'll probably get it. And then we weren't getting it. And I was like, why can't I do that? I don't get it. And then
you know what though? I think we've learned Maracaibo that way, which is a really heavy game.
No, that was all right.
And we flew through that pretty much.
I think some rules perhaps gel with you better as well, though. It depends on what...
Yeah, if it's relatable to another.
You know, if you've played loads of dice rolling games and then you sit down and play a dice rolling game, you know, you've got this backlog in your head of all these different rules that can relate to dice, and your brain just syncs up and goes, ah, this is like that one. I get it. Whereas if, you know, you're brand new to dice rolling... then this is going to be a bit more of a difficult thing for you to be able to get your head round.
Yeah, I agree.
Which relates to most other things. You know, if you play a lot of ball sports and then someone introduces you to a new ball sport, you'll probably be a bit more comfortable with it than if you've never done...
Yeah,
anything. You know, if you've never... For example, if you've never done a board sport and then you go surfing, it's going to be really hard.
Yeah, I think it's the same with learning languages as well. If you've learned a language in the past, you can pick up another one, even if it's not... Like I know some are a lot tighter to a different language, but you've gone through the process of learning it.
Mm. One thing I was just going to say when you talked about Maracaibo and then we're talking about Isle of Trains is that's one thing recently I've actually really enjoyed is learning games with another person.
Yeah, yeah.
I do this. There's someone I know near me, and he comes over and plays quite a lot. And we always have this joke. We've always got a new game to play or something. So... He comes over, gets a game out, and he's like, he literally reads the rule book and we read it together sort of thing.
Okay.
And it works really well because sometimes rules that he might have not picked up, I have, and some things I'll do and he'll go, oh, how are you doing that? And I'll go, oh, and then he'll remind me of a rule.
Yeah.
And we've both picked, so we've like covered each other's backs a little bit, but I find it more enjoyable. It's not like like you were saying right at the start about it being a bit of a chore. I think the chore is learning the game. That's a real chore. But doing it with someone, you're kind of like quite excited to find out the game. And then sometimes he'll go read some mechanic or something featuring the game. And we're like, ooh, that sounds interesting. Can't wait, you know. And it's actually really good. And I find that when we've done it online, we've like watched a video or we've like read the rule book. And then we play the game and we can kind of go, oh, what was that rule? And you'll either know or I'll know. And we can just, it's so good.
That's such a good point. You just made me think. I learnt Race for the Galaxy with Luke.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever seen the rule book, it's horrific. I mean, I remember playing it with you and you thought, what's this here? And it basically looks like a whole two sheets of paper, but that's reference cards. Yeah. The rule book is disgustingly bad. So we watched a video together and set it up together and learnt it together, just watching it. And you know what? It was brilliant because... Like, if I got 70 and he got 70, chances are, like, that's 140%, and the 40% would be the crossover, what the other person missed. So it was brilliant because we were like, yeah, sweet, let's play it. And then I was like, oh no, that rule's slightly different. And he was like, is it? I was like, yeah. But then I'd get something wrong and he'd correct that.
Yeah.
And I thought, brilliant. This is the advantage of learning a game together. Same like when we learned Red Rising together.
Yeah.
Made a big difference doing it with someone else.
Yeah. Well, cool. That's it. That's a podcast done.
Yeah, I know.
Learn games together.
Well, actually, learn games together.
That's it.
Watch videos together.
I was going to finish on key takeaways that our audience... Well, yeah, that would be nice. That our audience can go away with and for actually learning and teaching a game. So is yours going to be learn it with another person or any other...
Yeah, that's a good, really good way. Learn it together and go watch Meeple University.
There you go. Jake, your key takeaway?
My takeaway is have the humility to know what type of game that you are best at teaching. And with that, generally try making sure that if it's going to be a heavy game, that you set it up and you do a dry playthrough before you introduce that game to other people. Know how the game works first. If it's a lighter game, do a dry rolling teach, because generally a lighter game is going to be aimed at people that are not familiar with games. They're less likely to have the patience to sit there and invest their time in all these rules. So if you just get them playing the game, they will learn the game as they go on.
Nice. I think my key takeaway, and this isn't going to relate to every single game, if there's a solo, play it, because everyone that I've done that with so far, I know the game inside out then when it comes to actually playing with someone. And also, it's a better way to learn how to play the game.
That's a good point.
Because at least you're experiencing it as you go along, and there's always like a scoring system that you can kind of compete with, or whether you win or lose. Or I know quite a few games have apps that go along with it where you can kind of have a dummy player or whatever.
That's another key takeaway. If you really like a game enough... and you think I'm willing to invest the time into this game, buy the app, because it will help you to clarify any rules and you'll know the game inside and out.
Nice. I think that's a good way to end it on.
For anyone watching, what tips would you put as your key takeaway point for those that are learning as a best tip for teaching a board game? Comment below and we look forward to seeing your comments and we can feature them on one of our upcoming podcasts.
So that was our podcast for Mastering the Teach. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah,
it's good. Good fun.
Yeah.
Nice. We hope you've enjoyed it and we'll see you all on the next one.
And stay tuned for the game of the week coming up after this little outro.
My game of the week is Wormspan. So I'm sure everyone's seen this. It's probably one of the hottest games out at the moment. It's based kind of loosely around Wingspan. I think it's a lot more chunkier and... actually, that's probably not the right word. What's crunchier? Chunkier and crunchier than Wingspan. But I like it because it adds onto Wingspan. It's more of a board gamer's game, I think.
Wormspan. Unfortunately, it's not about worms.
That is a good point.
Worm.
Wormspan is not based on...
Worm. Worm.
Wormspan.
So my game of the week is Wormspan.
Wormspan.
How did I know that was coming? So Wormspan is based off Wingspan. Clues in the title. It's designed by Connie Vogelman. Which is the same person who done Apiary. And the designs are very similar. I really like the simplicity of them. They've gone through and made every single dragon in here. So it's based on dragons, not worms, as Jake
Instead
alluded
of the birds
to.
And the bees, it's the dragons and the bees.
Exactly. So it's a lot more crunchier than typical Wingspan. I'd say it's more the board gamer's gateway game. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So if you've got like a slight history into strategy games, maybe this is the one to lead in with rather than Wingspan. I think they've both got their purpose. If I was going to choose one, I'd probably go with Wormspan. That's just a preference thing. Although I prefer the artwork of Wingspan. So that's my game of the week. If you've got any comments about Wormspan, leave them in the comments below. And we'll see you on the next one.